This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Yik. It's Friday afternoon and it's our Doctor in the House segment with my co-host, consultant urologist Dr. George Lee. How are you today, George?
As usual, for the last 18 months, I guess, just can see you on screen, but actually can't see you in person. But with all these optimism I throw at you, I think you're going to throw back some pessimism, are you?
No. Not today.
Not today.
Because
it's not a suitable day to have pessimism.
Exactly. Because today we're talking about mental health, sort of looking ahead to World Mental Health Day, which is commemorated on the 10th of October, and that this year is on Sunday. And when it comes to mental health, I try to be optimistic in the sense of, encouraging people to be more aware, to reach out, to normalize talking about mental health issues. So this year's theme...
So finally we're on the same page.
Yes. And this year's theme, George, for World Mental Health Day is Mental Health Care for All. Let's make it a reality. Now, I guess, while being optimistic, we want to be realistic. So we know that great strides have been made in the awareness of mental health. So many more people are talking about it and accepting that it is as important as physical health issues. But, we want to find out what still stands in the way of ensuring that everyone does have access to mental health care, as the theme for this year's celebration has implied. So our guests today are Senator Dato' Ras Adibaradzi, patron of the National Alliance of Mental Health, as well as Anita Abubakar, President of the Mental Illness Awareness and Support Association, or MIASA. How are the both of you today, Senator and Anita?
I'm good. Thank you so much, Xiao-Yik, and also Dr. George. Assalamu alaikum, Senator.
Wa alaikum salam. Hi, everybody.
Thank you so much for your time today, Senator. So just a note, Senator Ras Adiba is also the Senate representative for people with disabilities. And we'll be going a little bit into that later as well. But first, if you have any questions or thoughts, experiences, comments you'd like to share with regard to mental health issues, you can call us at 03-7733-2900. You can also WhatsApp 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Anita, perhaps we can start with you to give us an idea of what is this National Alliance for Mental Health. I understand it was very newly formed. Can you explain why it was formed?
Sure. Thank you so much. Yes, the National Alliance of Mental Health is Malaysia's first of its kind. We formed it as a collaboration of various stakeholders, Xiao-Yik and Dr. George and everyone, including, mental health, NGOs on the ground, social enterprises, institutions of higher learning, and also persons with disability groups at the national level to work on peer rights, those that struggle with mental health issues, mental health disorders. And, as we know, mental health peers and our friends from the other disability groups are often left behind when we talk about the context of human rights and inclusion. And this is especially true in Malaysia. I think most of us know this. So with this realization, we wanted to create, a louder voice in promoting a collective action towards creating an equal society. So persons with all disabilities have equal rights, opportunities, and also social justice. So we want to be a more inclusive society where no person is left behind. So that is the purpose and objective of the Alliance.
Just very quickly, Anita, what do you mean by those who are left behind? What are their experiences?
So people with mental health disorders are commonly left behind because one, obviously, when we talk about mental health disorders, there's so much stigma attached to it. There's so much shame. There's so much fear. So not only do, the wider society have that stigma, but people with the condition also internalize stigma. And when this happens, obviously, we don't reach out for the help. That becomes a barrier, right? Because we are afraid, we're ashamed. So when we don't assert our identity, when we don't reach out for the help, obviously we are not go through that recovery process well. And what more, when we don't have comprehensive mental health services, we're not included in terms of, be it employment, education, social security, housing, transportation. So all in all, obviously, we will be left furthest in society. So what happens is we will then fall through the cracks of the system. And this is how someone with a mental health disorder will end up homeless or incarcerated in prison or institutionalized. That really sets it up.
Mm. Senator, can I bring you into the conversation to find out what does it mean to you to be the patron of this alliance?
Well, you know, it's such an honor because thing is, for a long, long time, we don't talk about people who have mental health issues. And when I was roped in, I was really, really glad because then, you know, I could speak on behalf of persons with disabilities. At the moment, I have to be very honest with you, with the pandemic. It has been very, very tough for us. And, you know, the ones who have already mental health issues who fall under the category of OQ mental, you know, they already are struggling, like what Anita was saying a while ago. But there are also other categories who have gone into that category as well, because it has been really, really hard, cooped up in the house, no job, and, you know, having problems within the family members and not being able to fend for themselves. So it's a lot more tougher after the pandemic. But I have to say, now with the Alliance, it brings us all together so that we have a voice, you know, and we speak on behalf of all our friends who are facing these challenges.
Anita and Senator, you painted a very kind of bleak picture before this pandemic. Obviously, equity, access to mental health care, stigma. Do you have any idea how do we fare compared to our neighboring countries within Asia and also the wider, globally compared to the Western nations?
Okay. Senator, you want to go ahead? Okay, go ahead.
Okay, well, thank you so much. You know, you're right that we somewhat, painted that picture. But I have to be very, very honest with you right now that I went through a lot of flack on my side, a lot of, getting used to things after I became disabled. And I have to say right now that in Asia, especially in Malaysia, I feel that, we are very shy on discussing matters pertaining to, being depressed, having, depression, anxiety and whatnot. So it's a challenge in itself when we want to bring it up and talk about it with our family members, you know, our close friends. And then what happens is we get shunned and they say, oh, you'll get over it. It's fine. So I think it's maybe in the European country, it's, overseas people are a bit more open. Here, if we were to go and see psychologists or psychiatrists, then people already say, you need to go to a mental institution, stuff like that. When in actual fact, all we need is people to bring us back to the right track or to support us the best that they can. So I hope I've answered your question. Sorry.
If I may add, yes. George? Yeah. Okay. See, one of the things about YASA and the advocacy work that we do, we also belong to TCI Global, which is Transforming Communities for the Inclusion of People with Psychosocial Disability. And, we're part of the steering committee, so we engage with a lot of our members from Asia Pacific and also other regions. And just to give you a little bit of insights, in other countries, especially even Indonesia, although there's many institutions in Indonesia, but in terms of advocacy and mental health, they are far ahead of us because they very much follow UNCRPD, United Nations Conventions on Rights of Persons with Disabilities. So they talk a lot about inclusion. They fight a lot for the rights of people with mental health disorders in their respective countries. So if you want to make that comparison, we are, I have to say, just through the discussions roundtable data that we have, we are about 15 years behind. Right now. Oh. But the pandemic hit has helped us tremendously in progressing the whole entire conversation. And I've seen it. Mental health literacy has improved. Help seeking behavior has improved.
Yeah. And of course, at the end, other end, you know, when help seeking behavior improves, you want to see the services improved exactly. as well. So we will look at that end of the spectrum in a little while. But just very quickly, Anita, I mean, Senator has been very open to talk about, you know, it was a difficult time for her after, you know, what she went through. And the thing about mental health and increasing awareness about it is to destigmatize it, right? And to normalize talking about your struggles. Would you be okay to share your personal struggles with mental health issues?
Oh, definitely. Thank you so much, Shawik, for the question. It has been about 8 years since my diagnosis. And living with a mental health disorder, let me tell you, it's excruciating pain. It is easier today because of the normalization of the discussion. There's more awareness today. But if you talk about 8 years ago, Shawik, you know, you want to hide, you know, in a closet, right? Because you're so ashamed. And having a mental health disorder, it's the opposite of confidence. It takes away everything from you. So I was really crippled during the time. I lost functionality in life. You know, I couldn't do anything, really. I couldn't be alone, couldn't drive, couldn't work, couldn't take care of my family. So it was a very, very difficult time for me. And I went through a lot of rock bottoms. But finally, what happened was I crossed over to recovery when I finally realized only I could change the situation. You know, obviously, religion was one of the key components. It was a holistic approach all in all. But with the realization that I had to garner willpower. That's the only way. You know, resiliency is ordinary, but willpower, the only time, I think, you know, Senator can vouch for me as well, when you're pushed and, you know, you lose functionality and, you know, there's no way out, this is when willpower comes in. It's like an ammo that you have. So eventually how I was able to cross over was when I found anger in me. Anger towards the condition because it crippled me. And then I found strength. I garnered willpower via my family, my husband, my mom, and my kids. They are my every reason for my recovery today.
Senator, is there anything you'd like to add to that?
Oh my God, just having Anita talk about this, it just opens up everything. When I first became disabled in 2002, it was very, very tough because, you know, I was going through it alone from being an able body and suddenly becoming disabled. It was very, very hard to adjust because like what people say, what you don't know, you don't care. Some of my friends, they were born disabled from young, yeah. And then, but for people like me, I became disabled halfway through my life. So I've had to adjust in a lot of ways. And for 1.5 years, I was just talking to myself in my room, looking at the ceiling, looking at the four walls and just praying and praying that God would just take me home because I really didn't know how to adjust to a new life being from an able body to a person. So it took a lot out of me, and actually I was talking a lot to God, and having faith really helps. The thing that brought me out is actually you know, the Almighty, yes, that helps. And then the other one is actually having a great sense of humor, and and that too. and then also I borrowed the spirit of my disabled friends. Because they're like, yeah, right, we're disabled, so what? You know, we'll manage, we'll pick up the pieces. And they went on, and I'm like, how the heck do you guys do this, you know? So thing is, the strength that I got, like just what Anita said, was like, you know, we don't realize the amount of strength that we have within us until we're pushed down to the floor or pushed to the wall. You know, and that's when you bounce back and you say, oh man, life is just so short, and I'm just gonna live it up, you know. And that's what I did. People were giving, they were all giving me motivation. It went one ear out the other, one ear out the other. My parents, you know, but I just I'm like, oh yeah. But in actual fact, you know what? Only you can make it happen. And people always tell me, who's your best friend? I said, I have a best friend. And I said, you have a best friend too. And they said, who's your best friend? Who's my best friend? They asked me. I said, look in the mirror. The best friend that you're looking for, the person you're looking for to give you that strength and to get you out of this rut is yourself, because no one's going to do it except yourself.
All right. That's really inspiring, Senator. And Anita, thank you so much for sharing. And, you know, after the break, I think what we want to do is sort of broaden our lens and look at how the environment around us can help us to be that person to bounce back and to give ourselves that strength when we go through these kinds of challenges. Today, we're commemorating World Mental Health Day, which actually falls on the 10th of October. We're discussing whether mental health care is a reality for all. Together with my co-host, Dr. George Lee. We're speaking to Senator Datuk Ras Adibarazi, patron of the National Alliance of Mental Health, and Anita Abubakar, president of MIASA, which is one of the leading organizations under this alliance. If you have any questions or thoughts you'd like to share, lines are open 03-7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Xiaoik, and my co-host for our Doctor in House segment, Dr. George Lee, consultant urologist. We're speaking to two guests today in the occasion of our World Mental Health Day, Senator Datuk Ras Adibarazi, patron of the National Alliance of Mental Health, and Anita Abubakar, president of the Mental Illness Awareness and Support Association, MIASA. We're discussing whether mental health care is a reality for all and how do we move towards that goal. If you have any thoughts or questions for our guests today, 03-7733-2900 is the number to call, or WhatsApp 018-789-8899. George, over to you. You had a question earlier.
Yeah, I mean, Anita and also Senator, thank you so much for sharing this. I think this is the really absolutely brave, and that's one of the ways for us to break down stigma. And then one thing that I noticed from listening to you is that this is a journey of self-discovery and recovery, and that is supported by people around you, religion, and also self-determination. Many people say that in Asia, we are quite close-knit as far as family is concerned, our religious belief. Do you think, because I noticed that you didn't even mention about doctors or medication. So can you just explain to us how, which part of that did you eventually kind of like, or if any, had any contact with psychiatrists, psychologists, or were any medication prescribed to you? Because I think one of the stigma about mental health is that seeing a doctor and being diagnosed and also being on chronic medication.
Yep. Anything
yeah.
First.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. George. That's a very good question, actually. Seeing a psychiatrist or the profession of psychiatry is highly stigmatized as well. So you're not proud when you bump into your psychiatrist at the mall, right? But you would be fast to introduce your doctor or surgeon, for example. Obviously I was diagnosed by a clinical psychiatrist because they are the only profession that can diagnose you, them and also a clinical psychologist. So I met with a clinical psychiatrist, of course. I had sessions. I was also given medication, which I took initially because I was going through a vicious panic attack cycles, right? So I was struggling so much with panic attacks. Breathing became a very difficult thing for me. So I have, full empathy actually for people that go through COVID-19, stage 3, 4, and 5, because I know how it feels to really gasp for air to breathe. So took the medication and then tapered off. Like I said, it has to be a holistic approach. You can't be taking medication and not taking care of yourself, not exercising, not sleeping well, not eating nutritious food, balanced diet, investing in hobbies, social connectedness. There's so many things you've got to do. People that need medication, go ahead and take it. If you feel, you're okay, you can do without it, go ahead, but have that consultation. But again, trust yourself in that recovery process because only you understand you know your struggles. This is the only way out. You've got to empower yourself. And like you said, Dr. George, self-determination, definitely. Very, very crucial in this process.
Senator?
Well, this is the first time I'm sharing about this, thank you, Dr. George, for your question. Since, I'm just putting all our cards on the table right now. I actually seeked help from a psychiatrist who was a good friend of mine. I have to say that I was afraid to go to the hospital to see a psychiatrist because I didn't want to be judged, and because of who I am and people know me, you know, I don't want people to say, oh, you know what, we just saw her at the hospital and seeing a psychiatrist, oh, she's gone wonky and everything. So I actually was on the phone most of the time with my friend, my psychiatrist doctor, and he was not in the country. So thank God there's this technology, and we were corresponding all the time, and he was speaking to me and guiding me out and prescribing me meds so that, you know, it would calm me down. Because, you know, it's not easy. Like I said, you know, being able, suddenly becoming disabled, you're just like walking straight to a wall and you get hit and you're like, oh, you know, you don't know how to handle it. So personally, I feel in Malaysia and probably in a few other countries as well, people don't want to talk about it and people are ashamed to go and see a psychiatrist or a psychologist. But it's very important for us to see a doctor. Because like I said earlier, they would guide you and bring you to where you should be and, you know, support you the best way. And it's not just meds that they give you that will help you calm yourself down. Having faith, one is helps what you eat, how you exercise, your sleeping, yep. You know, when Anita was saying she had that problem when she was breathing, I never knew that all this breathing thing was actually one of the reasons why I was down and out. I thought it was just normal. I thought everybody's probably breathing like me. But then I was like, also gasping for air, you know, I don't understand. And I'm so blur. And having consulted a doctor really, really helped, because, you know, I put myself out of myself. And then I listened to him and he said, close your eyes and just imagine this, you know, how are you going to do this? And that wasn't just the thing that I had to deal with, problems, because, you know, adjusting from being unable to a disabled. But what the other thing that I had to cope with was pain. I have chronic pain, and that made it even worse, you know. And I had to take pain for my meds for my pain. I had to take meds to calm myself down. And then one day I said, like, oh man, this really needs to stop. And I just jumped into the pool and I said, I'm going to feel good about myself and I'm going to go into sport. And I'm just going to do whatever it takes to get myself out of this. And I tell myself, so what if I'm having these problems? I'm going to nail it. I'm going to go into it. I'm going to get people to support me. And I went to see my shrink. So it's who happens to be a good friend. So it helped, you know. But having said that, you know, I really would like to recommend everybody to please, you know, seek assistance, seek help, counselor, psychologist, from a peer support or a psychiatrist. You need to. You shouldn't go through this alone. You mustn't allow yourself to go through this alone, right, Dr. George?
And you know, I do get what you're saying, because earlier you started off with saying, you know, it's down to you. You are the only person who can sort of turn this train around, so to speak. But if you don't reach out for help, you won't know how to do it. And you need that environment. You need the support system. And, Senator, you've been so open and you've been a role model for people with disabilities. So let's look a little bit from that frame. The National Alliance for Mental Health works from the Center of the Disability Rights Movement. And we do have the ACTA Korang, Akta Orang Kurang Upaya 2008 here in Malaysia, to sort of safeguard the rights of people with disabilities. Perhaps you can share a little bit about how mental health conditions are recognised in this Akta OKU.
Okay, well, first and foremost, I just like to share that Akta OKU 2008 is in the midst of being worked on and improvised and for the betterment of persons with disability in the country. At the moment, tidak ada penguatkuasaan. There is no, you say for example, if you do something towards us, there is nothing to protect us because people get away with it. Say for example, if you park into a parking bay, you don't have, and your building is not accessible and, you know, your university does not allow and discriminate people to come and study, especially persons with mental disorders. I just want to say this ACTA needs to be worked on, because it's not just persons who have mental disorders, conditions that needs help and needs protection and for our rights to be uphold, but it's also for other categories, all the seven categories of persons with disability. So yeah, it's not protecting as much right now, but we're working on it slowly but surely.
George?
No, I mean, it's just inspiring to hear that, you know. Initially, I was under the impression that the both of you actually had this journey alone with the self-discovery. However, I'm really glad that the diagnosis and eventually modern medicine really make a difference. I really think that is a good exemplary kind of like a suggestions that many people should consider getting themselves diagnosed and then also get treated appropriately.
Anita, can I turn to you? So Senator has talked about, you know, there are gaps in the Act and the enforcement needs to be strengthened. From your perspective of as a civil society organization helping in the community, what are the challenges and how could the Act be strengthened to help people with mental health challenges?
Right. Okay, so people with mental health disorders, first thing is recovery needs to be in the community, that's one. Two, people with mental health disorders are often stigmatized and discriminated because one, of course, lack of knowledge. Two, our struggles are not immediately visible to the naked eye, right? Or immediately visible to anyone really, right? So when you look at us, we seem normal, just like everyone else. So in that sense, it's difficult for you to help us. You're not able to relate with the challenges. And sometimes this is how even toxic positivity comes in, right? Not done deliberately, of course. So there's a lot of stigma, discrimination, be it, you know, education, employment, like I said, you know, housing, transportation, et cetera. So this is what we are hoping on. You asked about gaps, right?
Yes, that's right.
Okay. So there's a lot of gaps in that sense. The first thing, any person with a mental health disorder, because we've got supported employment programs, so they'll ask us, Juanita, should I disclose my condition to my employer? And I always say, if you feel up to it, please do, because it paves way for everyone else. Because if not, what will happen is usually, suddenly when the employee finds out because of your MC or, you know, recurrence of episodes happen in the workplace or you relapse, and then there's a lot of judgment, labeling, stigmatization that happens, and then you'll either be forced to leave the workplace or, they're not going to accept the MC. You're not going to be able to, whatever responsibilities that you have now, you're not going to be able to continue that after you go through your, 2 months, 1 month MC. So it's very difficult for you to sustain your job in the workplace. Two, when it comes to education, that's the same thing. If you were to disclose that you have a mental health disorder, especially those with scholarships, you're not going to be able to study overseas if you disclose it, because for funders, to them, you are seen as a risk. So you're only allowed to study locally. So that's also the other thing. And it's so obvious, Shaoei and Dr. George, like when we go for our talks and programs for, students that have twinning programs or, will eventually go overseas, and we say, are there any questions? Usually there's none because of that fact, because they are not able to disclose that they have that condition, or they're afraid to even disclose that they are struggling emotionally or psychologically, a fear of not being able to go overseas. So that discrimination, stigmatizing, that gap exists as well. But a lot has been done right now. And of course, housing is the other thing. A lot of people fall through that gap itself. And I think one of the big solutions that can happen is providing low-cost housing, working with state governments. We have a lot of Wakaf land, we call it, and hopefully by working together, we will be able to do more in providing that. So in actual fact, we don't have a sustainable model as of yet. So this is how that vicious cycle continues to happen right now. So you go through that recovery process, but nobody wants to give you that job. So now you don't have basic needs, and then you can't get a roof over your on top of your head. And then it reinforces stigma, because then people will say, look, Juanita, a person with mental health condition can't work, they can't recover. So those are some gaps right now.
I mean, Anita, you clearly pointed out a lot of gaps and discriminations in the community that we don't even think about. Like, for example, employment. And then also in my line, you know, anybody who is insured for your medical condition when it comes to psychiatry or mental health, it's really suddenly not covered. And that sort of thing, obviously, is a bigger picture that something needs to change. Is Mayasa involved in any advocacy work in order to change that, you know, for the long term?
We've done, you know, currently we talk a lot about, we do a lot of advocacy work. And so one of the things that we talk a lot about is obviously providing supported accommodation and also supported employment, right to work. And what we have done in 2019, we did in an international mental health recovery conference followed by the Malaysia stakeholder meeting where the stakeholders that were there, we collectively agreed upon 5 resolutions, which 2 of them, the top 2 was actually providing supported accommodation and housing for people with mental health disorders and providing supported employment and the right to work for people with mental health disorders. So it's not just Mayasa, it's actually the stakeholders collectively in Malaysia trying to push for this, Dr. George. And also the 4th resolution was the right to health care. And the last one was actually to close down mental institutions in Malaysia, because we don't want to be in institutions. Recovery must be in the community. So we advocate for this very much. And right now, Mayasa is running a campaign called Zero Coercion Campaign, because in Malaysia, a lot of coercion happens. And we just want to bring this conversation out in the open, Dr. George, because we want to practice, you know, we want to work on alternative solutions to coercion. We want to promote supported decision, because every person with a mental health condition must come to a informed decision, which they should and they can, and also informed consent must be practiced. So this is why we are opening up this conversation, so that we can improve the whole mental health system as a whole.
And Senator, at Dewan Negara, what kinds of policy issues, what kinds of discussions are taking place in terms of mental health and improving, you know, perhaps starting with the ACTA that you talked about?
Yeah, well, actually, when on Monday, I actually gave out my speech, and one of the issues that I brought up is actually about mental health issues. And, you know, why we are not talking about it, the stigma, the discrimination. And I have to say that, you know, it opened up a lot of people's eyes, especially the ministries concerned. One of the things that just now Dr. George was saying about insurance, right? And you were saying, oh, you know, like if you say, for example, people know that you are under the mental OKU category, then they don't give you insurance. But we've been fighting under the Association OKU Central and also all the other associations for many years now. And now Allianz is able to support persons with disability under the mental category, and also AIA. Other insurance companies are still a bit iffy. So when we talk about what Anita said just now, I brought out about housing, because, you know, like during the pandemic, I have to be honest with the two of you, Anita and myself, you know, we've been corresponding. I mean, we have a one particular case, a sad one, a lady who's been, you know, wondering about, and she's got that problem, and we bring her to one of the general hospitals. They don't want to take her in, and you know, she has that right to be in the hospital and be looked up, but because of the condition during the pandemic, they were not able to support her more. So after a while, they say, oh, but she seems okay, you know, and I'm like, what is okay? What is okay? So in the upper house, I actually tell them, you know what? It's okay not to be okay. But we must bring this up, because everyone in this house, I told them, have some kind of disability. And one of them is mental, and we're not talking about it. So one thing I said is we have to continue to raise awareness, and media plays a very important part. Like what you guys are doing right now today, we're discussing, this is really, really big, because there's a lot of people out there who's listening to us and wants to reach out, but they don't know where to go to. So the other thing that I brought up is we must have a lot of lines where people can call We need support, like what Anita said. You know, we don't want institutions. We want to recover within our community. We need to be there for one another. I raised that. I said, no one must be left behind. You know, I have a case. One of my friends is a top student, and then after a while, halfway, they realized that he's under the mental disorder. They kicked him out of university. And I fought with all the other different universities, and I managed to get him into one university. And he's come to a point where he's like, Kaka, is it okay for me to write this form to say that I have a mental disorder? And I'm like, yeah. And he says, but if I write that, you know, they're going to kick me out. And I'm like, let them try. Because if we don't fight, we don't raise it, forever nobody is going to talk about it. And the younger generation of persons with disability who have mental disorder is going to suffer. Because why? Because the four of us are not talking about it today. So the thing is, we need to talk about it all the time.
I would love to have been a fly on the wall when you told a room full of senators that every one of them probably has a disability.
And I know, they looked at me and they're like, you don't have to remind us.
And, you know, on that note as well, there was welcoming news earlier this week when the Deputy Health Minister announced that the Home Ministry and the AG's chambers have agreed to amend Section 309 of the Penal Code in order to decriminalise suicide attempts. And the proposed amendments will have to be brought to Cabinet before it can be tabled in Parliament. Senator, what do you think, Dewan Negara's, you know, how are the views going to be?
Well, I can say, I mean, all my buddies, they're on my side and they agree. And that was actually one of the points that I brought up. And I'm so happy that they went straight into it. But I tell them, you don't just say it because we are gathering, okay? You must walk the talk and you must make sure that, you know, you're with us all the way. So I'm so happy that they've done this. We should have done this a long time ago. Like Anita said, in Malaysia, we're like 18 years behind from other countries, right, Anita?
Yeah.
So, we all need to buck up. And mental health disorder, out of the 10 people that you see right now, probably 8 have it, but they don't talk about it because they don't know whether it's okay not to be okay.
Yeah, we need a standing ovation for a minute for all the advocates and everyone that has worked hard for this to go through the decriminalization of suicidal attempt.
Absolutely.
Good news. History for Malaysia.
George.
Good job, everyone.
Yeah. I mean, Senator, clearly you're doing a great job to change the policies and, you know, to actually fight for equality for people with mental health issues. Earlier on, you pointed out something which I really think a lot of people can relate to. When you first discovered that you're encountering problems, people keep telling you that you'll snap out of it. So I would like you to know, obviously, when we change the mindset, eventually, hopefully, we can destigmatize this. What do you say to people who constantly kind of like don't know what to say to you whenever they're faced with relatives or friends who encounter the problems of mental health, and really the only thing that they can say to you is you'll snap out of it? So what do you say to people who are listening here? How would you guide them so that they can be kinder and also be more empathic?
Oh my God, doctor, you know what? No one has asked me this question before, but I have to tell you something. When I first became disabled, right, I thought I had friends. But in actual fact, the friends that I thought I had were just acquaintances. There are two categories of friends and acquaintances. And the friends that I thought I had, they were not really friends. So you know what? I was on my own. I had one or two of my buddies, and then my family members who didn't know what to do because they were as blur as I was. And who would expect that this would happen to someone close to them? You know what I mean? So, to all those people who say that, oh, you know, you'll be fine, I can tell you what happened. Okay, I pacified by myself when people wasn't there for me. I was alone. I was in my room, wearing my diapers, using my catheter and lying down, not being able to move, cannot feel my lower limbs. And I just didn't know how to transfer myself from, the bed to a normal wheelchair. I kept falling. I was crying all the time. I was losing it. And they were saying, "Takpe, sekejap je. It's okay. You'll be fine. You'll be fine." No, it's not fine. You know, I kept telling myself, they probably didn't come and visit me, my friends, because, you know, like when somebody dies, you don't know what to say except sorry. So I pacified myself by saying, they probably didn't know how to speak to you because, you know, you are going through what you're going through right now. But in actual fact, people are afraid. Dr. George, people are afraid to talk about, you know, changes in other people's lives. People are afraid to talk about people who have mental disorders. They don't want to associate themselves with us. They don't realize that they go through it as well, but they just don't want to talk about it. So to them out there, I just want to say, just shut it. You know, if you don't have anything nice to say, don't say anything at all. And when you hear of somebody who needs support, you see the red flags being raised, you hear those little words, you really need to reach out before you lose that person. Because when that happens, that's just too late.
Absolutely. Dr. George, if I may add just one thing. I think one of the things that really helped me, because like Senator said, you know, when it happens to you, your family members, your friends don't know how to respond. They don't know how to react. So it becomes very awkward. But really how family members and friends can help is just by validating what you're going through and hearing with or listening with empathy and compassion. Because really when someone tells me, like when I'm having a tough or a rough time and when I, you know, express it out or say or share it, and then when someone says, you know, Anita, whatever, what you're going through right now is valid, just by saying that, it really helps tremendously. Let me tell you, whatever anxiousness, fear, panic, whatever I'm feeling right now, it just goes away. So really, if you're trying to help a person, please validate what they're going through and, you know, come from that place of empathy and compassion.
Perhaps MISA will do some workshop to help the general public to know what to do and what to say.
Yep. Yeah. We do that a lot.
Yeah. And, you know, just very quickly, we're running out of time, but Anita, we talked a lot about how people now know how to speak up and reach out for help. But yep. At the other end of the spectrum, is there help available for them? Very quickly, you know, what are some gaps in terms of the accessibility of mental health care? You have talked about how there is a lack of comprehensive mental health services. And if we could frame it within, say, you know, what would you like to see Budget 2022 addressing?
Right. Of course, we know mental health services is very much concentrated here, shall we, in Selangor and also Kuala Lumpur for sure. Not only mental health services, but also NGOs on the ground. Of course, it's because a lot of people that reach out or those that work obviously are in the capital city. So very much concentrated. And so because of that, people from the other states, you know, there is a barrier to access. The other thing, of course, is cost. You know, we don't have much or many psych mental health professionals or counselors, social workers. We don't even have certified peer support specialists in Malaysia. So, of course, due to that, you know, the private sectors, right, be it private hospitals, for them to access is going to be very difficult for the B40s, you know, and those, you know, from the vulnerable marginalized groups, definitely. So those are, you know, barriers. And obviously there are much resources. So for example, we've got health clinics, for example, 1,000 across the nation. We've got GP 6,000-7,000, but they're not everyone is well-versed in mental health. So a person that is struggling with a mental health condition, they might go home empty-handed, because you don't go to a GP, right, Dr. George, and say, I have a mental health condition, what do I do about it? You don't go and say that those things. You come in and you say, Doc, I don't feel too good, you know, or I have frequent headaches or frequent stomach aches, for example, or fear, you know, I have palpitations. And, you know, people don't equate that to a mental health condition when it could be psychosomatic as well. And it could be early warning signs, et cetera, et cetera. So training, leveraging on primary healthcare can be a big solution. And of course, the other thing is task shifting or task sharing. If we provide a little bit of training to the community, first responders, volunteers in the community, then they become a resource. And when that happens, a lot of people can get the help that they need, right? Because again, a continuum of care must happen. Not everyone with a mental health issue needs intensive clinical intervention just by, you know, talking to a person via a helpline, for example. And that is why what Befrienders is currently doing provides a lot of help to a lot of people. And if I frame it within the budget 2022, obviously, we're looking at 2021 this year. It's coming soon, right? A couple of days.
At the end of the month, yes.
We're very happy if we can expand community mental health services. One of the things that I always say is we do not have enough social holdings for people with mental health disorders and disabilities. So where do we see people like us? Usually in clinical settings, rehab centers, right? Because we don't have a place where we can engage, socialize. And I feel via community centers, because we have a lot across the nation which are underutilized. When I drive past by a community center, I see 2-3 cars. So if we can convert that into an activity center or crisis management center, we can help a lot of people. So I hope to see that and more job creation, job opportunities via this budget. And of course, supported accommodation. This is a right of every single person in Malaysia, and this right must be given to us, especially those that are not able to help themselves.
I have a question here on WhatsApp from a listener, which I think, Anita, perhaps you can provide some guidance for him. He says he has 2 young kids, and as a parent, how can he know that, if his kids are going through any sort of emotional or mental stress, especially during this pandemic?
Right. Thank you very much. That's a very good question. During this pandemic, a lot of kids are going through mental struggles. There's been a spike in terms of mental health issues. Obviously, 1, online learning, 2, being disconnected from their friends, which is actually equivalent to grief. So a lot of kids are going through grief. And of course, a lot of kids have lost parents as well. So what are the early signs? You can see mood swings in kids. They feel very irritable. They don't want to go to school. Anger. Frequently getting sick, either stomach pains, frequent headaches, or even low-grade fever. Difficulty sleeping at night and change of sleeping and eating habits, shall we? So if you see this in your kids, please talk to them. Very, very important.
All right. If I can get a final message from each of you. Anita, perhaps we can start with you before I turn to Senator. And Anita, perhaps you'd like to also give us a little bit of an idea of what Miasa is, working on.
Yes, sure. Thank you very much, Ali. So on Monday, everyone, we will be announcing our new service for the nation. Hopefully via this, more people will get the help that they need. And we are very happy because it is a collaboration with the private sector, Xiaoying and Dr. George and everyone. As we know, when the public, private sector and public come and work together, more things can be done. So we will be announcing it on Monday. We welcome, all the media, especially because we will need your help to spread this service across the nation so that every single person can get the help that they need. And we invite everyone to view it via Facebook Live on Miasa's Facebook between 10:30 a.m. to 12 noon. And we will be talking about this year's mental health theme, which Xiaoying, you have mentioned it, mental health care for all. Let's make it a reality.
All right. And Senator, a final message?
Well, I have to say that Miasa is doing a lot of things, and I wish not the very best, not just for them, but also for the our nation out there. To come together and realize that mental disorders, mental health issues is a big thing in the country, and that we shouldn't sweep it under the carpet, but rather, reach out and, like what Anita said, monitor, because during this pandemic, we don't want to have a lost generation, especially for the younger generation, because they're so lost. They're going through a really tough time. They don't understand. So it's very, very important that all of us see these little signs, not just from the young ones, but also amongst ourselves. Orang kata in Malay, they say you have to be busybody, kan? Busybody in a good way, so that we can monitor one another and see the signs before we lose anyone. So, yeah.
Absolutely. And George?
Well, actually, you and I know that it's jaw-dropping to hear both both Senator and also Anita talking about their journey and the process of recovery. And, you know, thank you so much. I mean, I learned a lot today, and I really think that mental health itself is just the mind is undergoing a little bit of trouble. If the rest of your body deserve to be treated when it's ill, why is your mind when it's troubled not deserve to have the same attention?
Absolutely. Thank you so much, all of you, for your time today. I've been speaking to Senator Dato' Ras Adibaradze, patron of the National Alliance of Mental Health, Anita Abubakar, president of MIASA, together with my co-host, Dr. George Lee, consultant urologist. You've been listening to Health and Living on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.